So we'll get to your questions and comments for Robert Cracknell. We'll finish up that conversation about evil in just a second. I also want to give you a heads up of another place where you can log in a response, and that's our Coast to Coast Facebook page. In fact, I asked Tim Banal, who is hosting the Facebook page tonight, to put up a question for me, and this is what I put up there. There are already 40 responses to this, and I haven't even mentioned it yet. Tonight's first hour guest was Gerard Adams. He's president of the National Inflation Association, creators of The College Conspiracy, a new online documentary that alleges that the U.S. college system is a scam, that they move money from the federal government through a loans program to these four-year colleges. That's why colleges are less inclined to offer more courses online or to lower their prices. They want to keep forcing you to come to the campus because that way they get more money from the government and they get richer while the system goes deeper in debt. And people are forced to go, you know, $20, $30, $40, $50, $100,000 in debt to get an education. So I just asked, looking back, do you think your college degree was worth the time and money? If you had it to do over again, would you have skipped college and gone right to work? If you didn't go to college, did your lack of college degree hold you back? And your response is on the Facebook page. If you're a Facebook user, go take a look at the Coast to Coast AM Facebook page and log in your answer. You'll find a very lively discussion going on right now. While we go to a lively discussion on the air next about Robert Cracknell, The Lonely Sense, the autobiography of a psychic detective, on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. All right, great. Let's finish that thought about evil, because you were kind of in mid-sentence when our shot clock ran out, Robert. Uh-huh. We were talking about the nature of evil, and I would contend that, yes, I think there are some people who are inherently evil. I understand your point about we all have a capacity for some evil, but that's like saying everybody has a capacity to be an alcoholic, so therefore nobody is an alcoholic. I think it's fair to say some people are alcoholics because they drink too much, and some people are evil because they do evil things. But you were going to say something then.
My point I was trying to make, you know, that this genetic dice tossing randomly, and you answered me by saying the reason I didn't is because I had the ability to come to terms or whatever.
Right.
The guy that is committing these acts, which are so antisocial and that what we would consider to be abnormal, is he totally to blame? Don't we as a society have some responsibility in this? It's a question I don't have an answer. It's not for me to pontificate. I mean, this is my own personal belief.
I get that. I get that. I think it's fair to say, do we have some? Okay, you could say because somebody like yourself grew up under these very difficult circumstances, but you also made good choices. And your response to those difficult circumstances was not to take it out on innocent people and make other people pay for your pain. And that's the bottom line for, you know, it doesn't matter whether if just to use the example again, because it's an easy parallel, you know, you know, society is very alcohol focused, but it doesn't mean you have to be an alcoholic and it doesn't mean you have to be a drunk driver. You can decide you're going to walk down to the pub and get hammered and walk home and never put anybody else at risk. Or you can decide, no, it's my privilege to drive drunk if I feel like it. And then, you know, suffer the consequences because society says, no, that's too far. Mm-hmm. Right. All right. Well, lots of people want to talk with you. And there's some questions here that only you, a psychic detective, could answer. So we'll just start taking them in order. William is in Kansas City, Missouri, east of the Rockies on Coast to Coast. William?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing?
Good morning.
It's a pleasure to talk to you, Mr. Punnett and Dr. Robert. Yes.
Yeah.
I wonder how you get your, you know, I would call it a gut feeling because I remember when I was a teenager, even not so long ago, I've had people want, when I was a teenager, they'd want me to go out riding around with them while they were drinking, and I'd get like a tinge in my spine and kind of a stomach ache and get kind of weak. And I wouldn't want to do it, but I did it, and we got pulled over by police. Just recently, maybe about a year ago, a guy across the street I'd been friends with wanted me to go down to a field by a Walmart and wait for him while he picked his crop. And I wouldn't do it, and he got mad, and I got that sick feeling again.
That's really interesting. So you're saying
premonition,
or is that what you consider them to be, William? Do you consider them to be premonitions of something bad coming?
I don't know. I know it's not. You know, it's not wise to do those things. I'm 50 years old. I don't need to get in trouble doing that.
You don't need to be helping somebody harvest their pot at age 50.
Yeah, right. I mean,
all right. Well, Robert, what's your response to that?
Well, my response is quite simple. Yes, you are experiencing premonition, for lack of a better word. And my advice is quite, well, you know for yourself now. If you feel it ain't right, don't do it. And it's as simple as that. Now, I give you an example. Many times, not so much now, I live on a little island, and we don't have great distances so that we can travel. But before, when I was traveling the UK and the world, I'd be driving along, and suddenly, whack, get off this road.
Right.
Now, I wouldn't hesitate. The moment it happened, I got off the road. Later on, I would check. I'd check the traffic news. I'd check the newspapers. Nothing happened. But supposing I hadn't got off. So my advice is simply this. You get this feeling, you act accordingly. Don't hesitate. Because in actual fact, you are having a portent of an event that can happen unless you alter course or events.
You know,
Does that help?
Yeah, I think that's very helpful. I refer to that in my own life as orthopraxis, right? Mm-hmm. Practice, and that because it's those nine times that you don't, you know, you go back into the house to check the oven, and it's that 10th time where you try to talk yourself out of it, you go back in, and the oven is on. And so it's better to follow that still small voice, even if it gives you nothing, because of that one time, you'll be trained to follow that voice when there's something there.
Yep, I agree entirely.
Paul is in Vegas on Coast to Coast for Robert Cracknow. Paul?
And good morning, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I've been in the business for about 28 years, and in my being in the business, I have found that just about 95% of all people who are really good psychics have had deep emotional sexual abuse when they're little. And it can be, the more severe it is, the more likely they will be psychic and or extra sensitive to other people's pain. I was wondering if our guest has experienced the same thing or has that awareness.
Well, yes. I mentioned already in the program, particularly a gentleman called Colin Wilson. He wrote a book called The Outsider. It was the beginning of his fame back in 1957. And we became great friends. And he suddenly came out, you know, he said, you are, without doubt, a typical outsider. And he pointed out something to me which made complete sense. The outsider turns inward. He seeks not exactly an escape, but he seeks to break away from the reality of suffering and pain and enter inward in some strange way. And yes, most psychics, in my opinion, and from my experience of them in my early days, were that they all had some specific trauma. Many of them, I mean, you must take this as I am saying it. Many people have troubles with their sexuality. And the amazing thing is that some of the finest psychics that I have come across have come to terms with this sexuality. They have come out of, I suppose the expression is come out of the closet or whatever, but they've come out and they've faced it. But they have this extra sensitivity. And I believe that this applies to most people. For all of you that are practicing psychics, that have been involved in this, you know, if you look at yourselves, you can see that you have had to rise above a certain situation or trauma. And this brings out this latent faculty. It brings it out much more because you have gone inwards, not looking for it, but it suddenly come to the fore, and then you have initial problems of coming to terms with the fact that you are considered to be different. Does that make sense?
I wonder whether that's a reflection of the of a sense of a need for survival, that your ability to survive is tied directly to your victimhood as somebody at the hands of an abuser, and then right to your development of that extra sensitivity, that you, because you were, and maybe it's the same thing true for somebody who inwardly knows that they are gay, or, you know, that whatever their orientation is, but they feel like they have to stay on guard, and that that sense of guardedness exercises, you know, it helps strengthen, puts real muscle on that latent ability that you talked about that you think we all have.
It's more as parallel to what I am saying.
Yeah, but it's evolutionary is what I'm saying, is that there's almost something about it that's evolutionary. First time caller line, Melanie is in San Antonio, Texas, and she's got a tough question tonight for Robert Cracknell. Is that right, Melanie?
Well, yes, sir, I do. I'd like to deviate from my question for just a moment and say, Mr. Cracknell, I understand where you're coming from completely as a victim of not only sexual abuse, but also incest for a number of years between the ages of 8 and 14. I know where you're coming from. You don't ever get over it. You just talk it through and get through it. But you don't ever get over it. So, yes, I know where you're coming from. Exactly. So I'm right there with you, sir.
Okay.
I do have a question. It's a little bit lengthy, but I'll try to shorten it. On December 25th, 1996, here in San Antonio, Texas, in a nearby community called Lavernia, there was a lady that was murdered. Her name was Patty Vaughn. I don't have any connection to the case other than what I'm going to tell you right now. 2 months after the lady was murdered, I was in that area looking for a new house. I went into a convenience store. As I was coming out, there was a photograph of the missing woman plastered all over the door on the way out. She was looking at me, and she was saying, "I'm here, I'm here, I'm here." This case has gone unsolved for 15 years. They think that they know who did it, and the entire area thinks they know who did it.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering if you had any feeling on this, and if you do, how would they, as the family, or we, as maybe somebody picking up something, prove it?
Any leads?
Yes. There are a number of leads.
I meant that of Robert. I meant just Robert picking up any leads from what you're saying.
You must appreciate one thing, and it is a sad reflection, but murder is now a common day event. My mailbag is full at all times of people who want to get some form of closure. Can you get involved? Can you get involved? Can you get involved? Mm-hmm. The case that you mentioned triggers something in me. And rather than go into lengthy details on the radio, please, if you would like to send me a link, just a link, to the case on the internet, send it to me. I'll quite happily respond to you, and I promise I'll answer you. But just give me a link that I can latch onto so I have a focal point.
Oh, I'd love
that. And that will be my pleasure. But as I say, you must appreciate that there are no guarantees here. You've intrigued me sufficient to say that if you give me a link, okay?
Oh, yes. The link has leads on it also.
I have a focal point. I need a focal point.
Okay.
And let's see what comes up.
Great.
I promise you that I will respond.
Oh, thank you, sir, so much.
Thank you, Melanie. Okay. Appreciate that. And that offer is then good for everybody. And no promises, but that's very generous of you, Robert. Let's go to Jose in Phoenix on Coast to Coast. The question for Robert Cracknell, The Lonely Sense, his autobiography of being a psychic detective. Jose?
Well, Ian, first of all, I just want to say thank you for taking the call. And, Doctor, it's a pleasure listening to you.
Well, I don't know this doctor thing started. Robert, am I missing something?
Well, yeah, I'm missing something too. No, I'm not a doctor.
The previous caller, I think, said that to be colorful. I just don't want that to become in stone that he's Dr. Craig.
You know, I actually hadn't heard that listening also, but I thought
maybe
I missed something when I heard
it. No, I think I just said it, you know, casually, and I think didn't want that to get carried away. Go ahead.
Got it. Okay. All right. Well, real quick, I actually have two things. Ian, one, I'd like to touch base on something you were talking about where you were saying the you know, going back in and checking on the iron or checking on the oven.
Right.
And some friends and I got into this conversation one night, and we came up with the theory that it's a lot more logical for whatever it is pushing us when we're leaving the house to make us think that the oven is on. Because we're more likely to listen to that sense and go back in and double check, as opposed to don't leave your house right now because something bad could happen to you if you turn out onto your street.
Oh, that's interesting. The thought is to delay you, even if it's not really the oven, because you'll be likely to follow up on that. That's cool.
Sorry. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Because it would be a more common belief. It's easier for us to believe that than it would be for us to believe an 18-wheeler's brakes are going to fail. And if you're in the intersection at that point, you're the one who's going to be hit.
That's compelling. That's interesting.
We were just talking about that, you know, a couple of years ago. But the real question is for the doctor. Doctor, I myself, kind of like the lady before, I'm also a victim of sexual abuse. Actually, incest when I was a younger male. And I just have a question for you, just pertaining to your idea about good and evil. And I don't want to be judgmental, so please forgive me if it sounds that way. But I'm just curious if the abuser for you was close to you, and is it because of maybe a love or deep compassion for that person that doesn't want you to rule out somebody being evil as being totally evil, as opposed to your theory that you mentioned about them just being less good? Because I could understand how, if it was somebody who was close to you, you don't want to see them as being completely evil. Because, I mean, I personally feel like the person who did what they did to me was completely evil. And I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that. Because, less good.
We don't have much time here, Jose, so let's go ahead and give a little. We have about a minute. So go ahead, Robert, your response to that.
Okay. No, this person had no closeness to me whatsoever. During the war, 39 to 45, all children were in London were sent out to the country to be evacuated onto families. Some got good billets, others got bad ones. I struck unlucky, and unfortunately, one of the sons, who was unfit for the army, was living at home. And there was no closeness at all. I mean, I wasn't in an environment of love or contentment whatsoever. I was just the vacuee. So there was no closeness there. And the strange thing is, I found myself in Nottingham one day where I had been evacuated, and I decided to see if I could trace anybody. And luck would have it, I'm going back a few years now, but luck would have it that I found out where the lady who was my foster mother lived, and I went to see her. The look on horror on her face when I introduced myself indicated quite clearly that the case was widely publicized, so she knew instantly. And I had to say to her, "Hi, I'm Bob Cracknell,
Well, hang on. We're going to have to get the rest of that story. I'm sorry, Robert, again. We're going to have to get the rest of that story coming up next. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. He's not a doctor. How many times do I have to... And when I say we have like 10 seconds before the break, I mean it. We got like 10 seconds, by the way. You know, I'm not just being colorful. You know, the apocalypse can't come fast enough at this point. Let's get back to your calls. The Lonely Sense, the autobiography of a psychic detective, Robert Cracknell. And then we'll get to the question which I mentioned ages ago, which I got distracted from talking about. But I'm asking about the so-called apocalypse for next week. What's his psychic vibration on that? On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Ponet. All right, so Robert Cracknell, you were just talking at the bottom of the hour about the closeness vis-a-vis people who had been abusers. And you had a thought, but I ran out of time. So did you want to finish that up?
Yeah, sure. No, as I say, this person wasn't close, but I do understand the question. I mean, you've got a father or you've got a mother, and there is this strong attachment and also the need to protect them. And so perhaps that can put a different slant on it. With me, it wasn't the case. It was virtually a total stranger. And I would say when I later visited the woman who had looked after me, I had to explain straight away, look, I haven't come for any other reason, just a curiosity to see you, to see where my beginnings were. That's all. And I didn't even mention the guy, didn't even ask about him, sat and had a cup of tea and said goodbye and closed the door on that section.
But she knew.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you knew that she knew and she knew that you knew. And that she allowed that sort of thing to happen.
Mm.
Yeah. Carl is in Milwaukee, wild card line on Coast to Coast for Robert Cracknell. Carl?
Good morning, Robert. Good morning, Ian.
Good morning.
My grandma was a Croatian gypsy. Grandma knew what was going to happen tomorrow and more. And later on in her life, when she was quite sick, I was able to take care of her. And I believe being in proximity to my grandma so much that some of that psychic skill rubbed off on me. And it's something that I can't turn on or off. And grandma had quite a sense of humor. And so I can be going on my day, whatever, and I'll have this image or a voice in my mind. And I kind of just giggle and say, hi, grandma. And, you know, she'll tell me what's going to happen next or something that I can expect in my day. And just recently I ran into a friend, went over to his house, and I met his wife. And grandma whispered in my ear, and I said to her, I laughed, and I said, why? You're going to have twins. They're going to be naughty. I think you'll name them Topsy and Turvy. That's how naughty they will be. And sure enough, my friend's wife had twins, and they had jaundice, and they cried all the time. But anyway, the question that I have, Robert, would you consider this skill a blessing or a curse?
Neither. I wouldn't. I consider it now as totally natural. I've got a great deal of time to be able to reflect on it. I'm now 76 years of age. I have retired on a little island. I have a great deal of time to reflect on it. I don't consider it a curse or a blessing. I consider it to be fascinating, and I'm rather sad that I haven't seen dramatic changes in the scientific attitude towards it. I do fervently believe that we all have it. The manifestation, you talk about your grandmother. I'm not going to give any explanation of what I feel about that aspect of it. It is your focal point, and it is that which is like the tarot card reader, the one who reads or the crystal gazer, and they gaze into the crystal. Now, to me, these are tools only to allow you to concentrate your focus. You are reacting to a natural psychic ability. Your focal point is your grandmother, and that is it, as far as the way that I feel. So it's not a blessing. It's not a curse. it is a faculty which you can take one stage further if you so choose. But then again, you have to consider the results and the effect that it can have on your life if you do decide to go deeper and to develop it fully. But the way you're operating is, to me, natural. So don't consider it to be a curse or a blessing. And if you've got the courage to say it, then more power to your elbow. And the more you practice it, the more you become confident. And eventually you will be able to operate without the focal point of your grandmother, and you will be able to operate from your own natural ability.
Joe is in Boston, wildcard line on Coast to Coast for Robert Cracknell. Joe?
Good day to everyone. Hello, Gina. And I wanted to just quickly deviate to say I was also physically, not sexually, Robert, abused, and being visually impaired makes it twice as difficult. But I admire your spunkinarity, and I'm glad Coast to Coast players working. And I want to say hello to my seeing eye instructor friend in San Antonio. That's where that lady's from. Now, my question is, Robert, what about the Natalie Holloway case? And Gina said, that's a good question, so I got to ask. Is there
okay.
anything? You have
this is the one on the island, is it?
On Aruba. Yes, it is.
Aruba. Yes. Where is she? You know where she is?
The question of her body is what a lot of people...
Yes, where is her body now? Because this guy did all... and they can't find her, and it's a mess. I saw that they had a movie on about it tonight. And
sure.
Parents have been through, you know what, Ian. They've been through holy hell.
They've been hell. Robert, what do you think on that?
Well, I'm not sure if I've got my facts right, and... The case that sprung to my mind is one that I recall about a woman who was on an island on or something like that, and they got two guys.
I'll give you a quick thumbnail. So she was a high school senior here.
Uh-huh.
It was on a senior trip, they call it. Some high schools do this as a tradition. They went to Aruba. She was drinking. She fell in with a handsome guy who had local political connections. Two other cohorts of his.
Yep, that's the one. I've got the case.
Right.
I've got the
so
case.
So she's a younger woman, and they've never found the body. They have various confessions of this guy, but not, go ahead.
I recall some time ago somebody asked me, to which I said, this is a complete mystery to me. And somebody, to coin an expression, has taken a good backhander from this. They know who did it. Without any question of doubt, and as to why they don't apply normal, everyday police detective methods to break this guy. As far as I am concerned, I do recall a case. We're not looking for the perpetrator. The perpetrator is well known.
He's arrested. We know that. But the body, the part, that's the part that confounds the family, is where is the body?
I'm sorry, but my opinion is eaten. there's a lot of big fish in the sea.
Yeah, that was definitely an operating theory. What about Osama bin Laden? You know, somebody even posted this on the Facebook page. I was reading some of the Coast to Coast AM answers to the question I put up earlier this hour, but somebody said, where were the psychics on Osama bin Laden? Why didn't somebody just come out and say, hey, I know just where he is. He's alive. He's sitting in a compound. He's in a suburb. You know, he's in a nice place, living high in the hog. Why wasn't the psychic able to nail that one, do you think?
I don't know. I really don't know. All I do know, as I say, a psychic leads a normal life. The same as everybody else. Me, I enjoy a gin and tonic and a cigarette and relax. You're not switched on all the time. Osama bin Laden is extremely important to the American people. That is perfectly obvious because of the atrocities that occurred at 9/11. I think the rest of the world had become somewhat inert to him. You know, we have this new phenomena of terrorism and that it is affecting the world. But I suppose, ask me the question, why didn't I know? my simple answer is it really didn't grab my attention. That's the only answer I can give you.
Okay.
You know, you're not on call 24 hours a day. God almighty, you wouldn't have a life. So I don't know. But that's my answer is that I've become somewhat inured to the whole situation at the moment. And I don't have any great feeling for revenge or anything like that. The American people have a great deal more to come to terms with. And so, therefore, I can understand that where were the psychics of America who are employed without any question of doubt by the major organizations, CIA, FBI, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I don't know. Let me ask you about next week then. So there's a popular internet mostly, but also broadcast to a degree and movement about the end of the world coming a week from today. Any sense of that?
I have no sense whatsoever of it. I think that a lot of people seem to be coming up with all forms of theories regarding the Mayan theory.
Yeah, the
that
2012.
In 2012, the world will come to an end. And there's also another theory which just hit the headlines that there's going to be a major earthquake in Rome within the next few days. And this is going to be disastrous. I have no feelings on it whatsoever. I'm being perfectly honest. I believe that something dramatic is taking place in the whole world, and it is visible. It is painfully obvious. The weather conditions, everything, there is a dramatic effect taking place. Little island that I live on, we're normally basking in 30 degrees, 35 degrees in May. We haven't hit anywhere near it, and at night we're having to sit inside and put a cardigan on. I've never known it before in the 21 years I've been on the island. There are dramatic changes taking place. But as to the end of the world, next week, I don't see it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Glad to hear. By the way, too, there was no devastation. The prediction for the Roman earthquake was May 11th, and so we are past the danger zone.
There's been a little update on that, but this guy who they give credence to was the last time was known to be a couple of days out, and this time he could be a week or two out. They're not letting it go, really, are they?
All right. Noreen is in Montana on Coast to Coast for Robert Cracknell. Noreen?
Good morning, Doctor and Ian. What I wanted to know, Doctor, is that little Madeline that's missing over there in Britain. Do you have any thoughts on where she might be? And would you come to America? Most Wanted could surely use you. And then at the end of his answer, may I make two comments, please?
Well, we don't have much time, I'm afraid, Noreen, because we've got so many people that want to get through to him. So let's just go with the questions here, because those are many questions. Let's talk about that. The first one, the missing girl in England.
Madeline.
Yep.
She's missing from Portugal.
Right, but the British couple, and they were on vacation.
Yes,
and
Madeline McCann, missing from Portugal. What are my feelings? My feelings are that she is still alive. I also have a stronger feeling that the connection with this rests with the New Zealand area. And I think that is one of the biggest leads ever. What is more interesting is that... the British police now have been, Scotland Yard, have been asked to come into it and reopen the case. And I think that this will bring about closure.
Very interesting. Mike is in Wisconsin on Coast to Coast for Robert Cracknell. Mike?
Hey, Ian. Hi, Robert.
Hi.
I don't know how to put this, and I hope you and I are going to be on the same wavelength here. But I also... was a murder suspect, as you were. This happened 27 years ago. And police, what happened was a week later, it had come on the news. So if anybody had seen this person, please call the police department. So I did. And then a deputy came over and talked to me. And so, I don't know, a few years went by. They're really hot on me at first, you know. And I talked to another psychic in Chicago. She was from Georgia or Alabama. And she kind of said that I knew this person and that they knew that I was, or she knew that I was angry about it because I lived here so long and these cops, you know, I knew them all. We all were friends. So, okay. So years go by later and then the cold case guys come in. So this was 9 years ago, the cold case guys came in. And they're talking to me and, you know, and then they asked me about this other guy and that I had known and worked with. And I said, yeah, what about him, you know? And I says, I don't know, you know. It's not,
we're running so out of time here. I just got to make sure we got to get to your question.
Really quick, because it's not that I really need the closure or anything, but they did kind of say they were sorry. My mother said she thought that it was my mother's kind of clairvoyant, but she said she thought it was a police officer, and I told the police officers that my mother said she thought it was a guy with a uniform. You know, they said they're sorry. You know, but they never really gave me that. I felt like the police were involved with this.
So you want to ask whether or not the police are involved? Does Robert have a feeling of that? Is that what your question is?
Yeah. I mean,
that's fine.
There was nothing that came up after this. You know, they just, I haven't been bothered or talked to for 9 years, and that's fine with me.
I got it. Well, let's get the time we have an answer for that. Did you sense of that, Robert?
Well, from what it's, I have no feelings or thoughts whatsoever as to whether it is a policeman or not. What I find interesting, if the cold case people are now involved, it is a matter of fact and basic detection work that they will approach everybody that may have had some contact with the police over the matter. This would be normal for the cold contact investigators. But I have no feelings. I can't say that I agree with you that, yes, it is a policeman. I mean, this would be totally ridiculous of me to say so because I don't have any feelings on it.
Fair enough. West of the Rockies, Eric is in Idaho, and he's been waiting for a half hour on Coast to Coast for Robert Cracknell. Go ahead, Eric.
Hi, Ian. Hi, Robert. Hey, I just want to say really great show. I can definitely tell that you are truly connected to, you know, the eternal. Anyway, my question is about time. And its connection to psychic ability. And when I say time, I mean like time is in the sense of past, present, and future, one eternal moment in the ever constant now. And my question is, do you believe that psychic ability is at least partly the soul's connection to that eternal time of that, you know, one eternal moment? You believe, and it would be partly that and then partly a personal connection, like,
okay.
All your last phone calls, these people asking you, you know, and you're completely honest. I can tell that, you know, you just like Bin Laden.
The time we have is our problem here right now. So go ahead. Let's get an answer for you. Robert?
Yes, I think that time is possibly the biggest clue that we have to understanding the psychic faculty. As for the predictions of past, present, or future, now is as a result of that which has been. That which will be will only be as a result of that which is now. If you look from a third dimensional point of view and have three dots, past, present, and future, and you see quite clearly the distinction, the higher you go and look down, these points come together. Until eventually, all you see is the one dot, which is past, present, and future. And I think it is that zone that the psychic steps across into.
Very interesting. Great way to get to know it, too, is by reading The Lonely Sense, the autobiography of a psychic detective, Robert Cracknell. Robert, quick knock-knock joke. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Armageddon.
Armageddon out of here.
There you go. And let's hope we won't all be saying that a week from tonight. Thank you so much for your time. God bless you.
Let me tell you one.
Okay. Got to be quick.
There was a notice outside the spiritualist medium's door. Please ring the bell. Knocking causes confusion.
Thank you so much. Dave Stumat, and I do too.